WDEOradio.net.
You're listening to 990 WDEO Ypsilanti Detroit. This is Henry of WDEO wishing you and yours a blessed Christmas.
It's a pleasure to have Penny Armstrong on with me. She's a well-known writer and also a speaker, retreat leader, and works a great deal, of course, with Ascension Press. But I want to tell you about her book, Dear God, I Don't Get It. Actually, it should be available both at the Ave Maria Radio online bookstore at AveMariaRadio.net and other locations as well, including EWTN. But I just find Patty so delightful and so interesting to talk with and so... not only well-informed, but she has such a way of explaining the faith in her writing and in her speaking. And I love this book because it really is, I think, a helpful tool for families, especially family with kids who are, you know, trying to teach them the faith. Hey, Patty, how are you?
Hi, good morning, Teresa. It's so good to be on with you again.
Well, thanks for joining us. All right, where did the idea for Dear God, I Don't Get It come from?
Family life, my own family life. And also, not just my family life. I have 10 kids, and 8 of them are boys, so it's no surprise that the main characters were boys in the story. But in my first book, Catholic Truths for Our Children, it's a guide for passing on the faith. And one of the things that I kept encountering in life were people losing their faith because they felt that their prayers hadn't been answered. And I think even as adults, we struggle with that. So that's basically the crux of the story here. There's a boy who prayed that his dad would be able to find another job so they could stay in Kalispell, Montana. His dad lost his job. And then he felt that God hadn't answered his prayers. And so he started wondering, well, what's the point of praying at all? To further complicate things, he realizes his brother was praying for the exact opposite thing. He wanted to move. He thought it would be fun. So now he's really confused. So we kind of journey through the life in this sixth grade boy, and in his dealings with his daily life. And so kids are able to kind of experience their faith through the life of a boy who is just trying to get through and make sense of it all.
And he kind of walks through things, doesn't he, trying to figure it all out, which I think is a great way, you know, to experience this through the life of someone else. I think is a great way for kids to kind of walk through some of their issues maybe with the faith, right?
I think so, because I think at some point in everyone's life, they're going to wonder, well, what's the point of prayer? That a lot of times parents teach their kids God loves us, he answers our prayers, and then it's a little more difficult for kids to wrap their mind around the idea he loves us, and he answers my prayers, and my prayers are meaningful, and yet I didn't get what I asked for, and I'm suffering, and why is that? If God loves me, then why is he doing this to me? And they have a hard time understanding that. And alongside, as the main character, Aaron Ajax, is struggling with this, he expresses that he really has always looked up to the saints and heroes. So he decides he's going to be a hero, and he takes matters into his own hands. And as a result, he starts using defeat and making himself look like something he isn't, and it all falls apart like it usually does. And then the very next day, he becomes a hero just because he's circumstantially in a situation where he needs to call 911. And he starts to realize, gee, I didn't really do anything. God just put me in this situation. But then the third situation is he has to make a choice. To really be a true hero, to make a difficult choice, and to lose everything. But in making this choice, he may not seem to be a hero in the eyes of his peers. Instead, they may all be angry at him. So it kind of goes through the different ideas of following God, too, in our lives.
So without telling us the ending, I guess this is kind of telling the ending, but he does come to...
Well, it's a happy ending, of course. It's a kid's story.
Yeah, but he does come to believe and understand the importance of prayer and faith in the end, doesn't he?
He does. I think like so many of us, you know, when I wrote the Amazing Grace stories, the whole gist of those stories were that we had our struggles, but through the grace of God, we would come through those struggles, and we'd always end up on top and closer to God as a result. And that's basically the theme of the story, is he hangs in there. He doesn't really understand. He's confused, but he knows there's nowhere else to go, so he hangs in there. And like so many of us have experienced, is that you get to the other end of your troubles, and then you have a kind of an aha moment, like, so this is what was, you know, God's plan all along, and it's a better plan than what I would have planned myself.
I also think, too, it's important, and this is obvious in this particular book, that you can learn from your mistakes, that God allows us, you know, to have that free will. He'll never take that away from us, but he will use those situations and apply them if you allow him to, kind of a Romans 8:28 thing.
Absolutely. You know, God can use all things for good. And he doesn't just make it go away. It doesn't just change from good to bad. He actually uses the bad that we once did or the mistakes we once made. He uses those now as a learning tool and sometimes as an example to others.
And I think it's a great example because of the culture that's out there. It says when things don't go right, you know, just definitely change your circumstances or just get out of a situation as opposed to working through it.
Absolutely. And so many of us want to save our kids from pain of growing up, and we can't. And that's our biggest frustration, is we don't want them to feel that pain. But if you work through it and you just stay with God and you take it a step at a time, moment by moment, but you never walk away from God, even at times when you're confused and you're hurting and you don't understand why he's allowing something to happen, that in the end, you know, everything turns out one way or the other. The goal is to stay close to God through it all.
If you're just joining us on Catholic Connection, we're talking with author and writer Patty Armstrong, Dear God, I Don't Get It. The book is published from Bezalel Books. The website is bezalelbooks.com, also available from avemariaradio.net. And, of course, Bezalel is the publishing company that published my testimony book, Newsflash, in the All Things Girls series. Let's talk about the age group for this book, Patty, Dear God, I Don't Get It. You mentioned the perfect story for 3rd through 6th graders, Catholic kids in classrooms. I'm wondering, though, it sounds like parents could also use this book.
You know, we can, because we have to guide our kids. And kids younger than 3rd grade, it's at the reading level of a 3rd to 6th grader, but you can read it to kindergartners and 1st graders, and they would understand it, and I hope enjoy it. My kids enjoy it. You know, I have all these kids. I test everything on them. And they don't say things just to be nice to me. You know, they let me know. As a matter of fact, the characters in the story, I needed to hang the characters on people I really knew. So I hung them on my 3 oldest kids. And so they're grown now. And I asked them, I sent the book to them, and I said, go over this, tell me what you think. Because Luke actually is a writer himself. He's 24 now. And we worked on a book together, as a matter of fact, Amazing Grace for Survivors. And he gave me some very good suggestions and comments. And it was funny because he said, Mom, I would have an exclamation point at the end of that statement, because they knew those were their personalities. It's a work of fiction, but it very much reflects the personalities of my own kids.
Now, you mentioned that there's some apologetics at the end of the book. Tell us about that.
Well, not so much apologetics. It's questions and vocabulary. It can be used in a classroom. It doesn't need to be. But when I got done, I thought, you know, this would be so nice, especially in Catholic schools, for kids to have a book that's meaningful, that's quality. Well, I guess I don't want to say that I'm writing quality literature, but that it reflects the faith and it's just a good story. And so for anybody who wants to use it in a classroom, I went ahead and added questions to think about and words to know so that it could easily be adapted for classroom use.
What do you think is the biggest challenge for parents today? Is it that? Is it being able to surround them with good examples when they're up against this culture that they're bombarded with just the opposite messages? I mean, 24/7, it's just incredible what kids are hit with today.
Absolutely, and that's why we have to leave no stone unturned. We have to watch their programming. I mean, you and I are preaching the same message. It is a more difficult culture to raise children in than when we grew up, because society supported parents. If you wanted to raise a good Catholic kid, you didn't have to fight society to do it. Now, every step of the way, your kids are getting the wrong examples. And so we need to do everything we can, and we need to look at the books that we are letting our kids read. I'm sorry, I might be rubbing some people the wrong way, but I don't think Goosebumps is a good book for kids. And I've looked at some of those books.
Mm-hmm.
We have to make sure that the literature we're giving our kids reflects what we want to hand down to them.
Also, I was just at EW10 a couple weeks ago, and we were taping a, I think Cheryl probably told you this, taping a series, a 13-part series on our All Things Girls books, and had the opportunity to sit in on Life on the Rock, and Father Thomas Eitnauer was the guest that night. I love him. What a great, great man of God who speaks the truth with such, you know, eloquence and directness. He was talking about just this, about the fact that we are introducing kids to this stuff that, you know, introduces them basically to the occult. And especially he was talking about the Twilight series and whatnot. People are saying, oh, what's the big deal? The vampire's a good guy. He's not a bad guy. But, you know, these things tend to get darker and darker and darker, and it's about something that they don't need to be exposed to because there is so
Absolutely.
Much darkness out there. Yeah.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. That was my issue with Goosebumps. Now, I didn't read every single book in the series, but I was a Sunday school teacher, and my two girls were helping me, and they took the kids to the gym, and I picked up a book that was sitting on a kid's desk, and it was a Goosebumps book. And I just skimmed through it chapter by chapter very quickly, and basically it was an occult situation. There was a dummy that was possessed, for heaven's sakes. It was a possessed dummy doing evil things, causing all kinds of trouble. And then I skipped ahead to the end of the book, and the main character winked to the dummy because she had given it to someone else who was an enemy of hers, and they winked to each other because now he was going to cause havoc and evil in this other person's life. And I thought, oh, good heavens, you know, this isn't even a book an adult should read. It's just a bad, it's evil.
And yet there's so much of that out there.
There is, and parents let their guard down. You know, they think, well, it's reading, my kids are reading, and you know what? This was a Catholic school. I was teaching Sunday school using one of the classrooms, and this sometimes pits Catholics against Catholics. That's why I said I tread lightly, but we need to take some responsibility and take a look at the books our kids are reading and not say, well, their friends are all reading this book, and they're good Catholic families, and so it must be okay. It may or may not be okay. We need to look into it ourselves.
Well, that whole idea of, oh, well, he or she is reading, so this must be good. Well, then why don't you give them a pornographic magazine? They can still read that. I mean, that's ridiculous, that kind of thinking. You know what I mean?
I know, but I'm sure you're very familiar with that mentality. My kids are reading, so it must be good. Not necessarily. You know, you got to make sure they're reading good things and not just good and wholesome things, but, you know, like the Bernstein Bears. That's for younger children, good messages. But why not bring God into it, too? Mm-hmm. If we have the opportunity to bring God into the life of our kids through books, then let's do it. And a kid isn't always going to read an apologetic books. You know, they're going to learn religion. There's Bible stories. There's saint stories. And I read those things to my kids. We love the saint stories. But it's also nice to have a regular, everyday kid just going through life. And how do they put that into their lives? How do they put what they've learned into their everyday living?
You know, this title of the book, Dear God, I Don't Get It, how many times have we adults said that to God?
I still, you know, and I'm sure you have those moments too. You think you got it all figured out. Okay, God, I trust in you. I know I'm not always going to get my way. We're just going to be suffering. But then you find yourself in the midst of a problem or suffering, and there we go. You know, God, what are you doing? I don't get it.
Yeah, explain this to me, please. Yeah,
yeah.
You know, this book is about a young man who is upset about his family moving, and it's a very beautiful story. He's a sixth grader. He's happy and comfortable with not much more than the annoyances of a little brother to disturb him, and he takes his friendship with God for granted. And then a change in family circumstances uproots him from the home and friends he has known his whole life. So it kind of walks him through this situation, difficult situations, how he makes himself appeal to friends in school, and it just brings up some questions of always hanging on to God and never letting go, regardless of the circumstances. But I really think, and I encourage this for parents to do this with our All Things Girl and All Things Guy books, to read these books, instead of just giving these to your kids, which would make a great Christmas gift, by the way, but to read these books with your kids.
Absolutely. You know, I read a lot of books with my kids, and I went over the All Things Girls series too, and we can't read those stories that reflect God and not get something out of it ourselves. Not only that, but we have that shared understanding with our kids, the things that we've shared and read together.
Now, what about the illustrations in the book?
You know, the illustrations, they mean so much to me because it's everything I wanted them to be. And I have a friend who is a very talented artist, and I gave her zero direction. And I envisioned that the illustrations would be something like the Beverly Cleerly books, Henry Huggins, Ramona, mm-hmm. if anybody remembers those. And in my mind, that's how they would come out. And that's exactly how they came out. And I just said, my friend Shannon, I said, you know, just draw what you're inspired to do. And chapter by chapter, she would send me her illustrations. And I loved each and every one of them. But there was something a little bit surprising. There were some of the illustrations, for instance, when the story is in Kalispell, right before they move, she drew a picture with a stairway in the background from the living room. And it's exactly the way our house looked. She had no way of knowing that. The dog in the story, she never saw that dog, and she drew it exactly the way the dog looked.
Wow.
I said, Shannon, you're not going to believe this. But that's, you know, when she, each time she sent me that picture, I said, that's exactly the way it was. So she's a very good friend and a very godly woman, very prayerful. So I feel like she was definitely inspired by the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's when you know that the book is, that things like this are meant to be, when you see these little signs.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the biggest reasons, I think, and it's kind of a theme that runs through all my books, whether fiction or nonfiction, is the idea of that complete trust in God, mm-hmm. even during those difficult times. Because I'm betting if you've met people who've lost their faith in God, that you're seeing the same things that I've seen over the years. It's usually because they feel like God let them down, and then they start to think maybe there is no God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we need to start helping our children understand from the time they're very little that there is struggling, there's times when we don't understand things, but there's always a God, and He always loves us.
Well, the culture tells us that. The culture tells us that we're supposed to have everything right at our fingertips when we want it, that we should be able to get it, that we have the ability on our own to get anything we want, to do anything we want, and to make us feel good. And if something doesn't, a situation, a job, a person, a marriage, a relationship, then, well, by golly, let's just move on to the next thing that's going to make us feel good. Time now for us to take a quick break. You're listening to Catholic Connection, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. We'll be back right after these messages. Don't touch that dial.
Now on DVD, unlock the mystery of the world's most famous star.
As I came across an article by a PhD astronomer that took the position the star was a real astronomical event. Whether they believe in God or not, they're going to show you this shot.
Compelling scientific theory that the Star of Bethlehem existed from a cynic's point of view.
That's what John saw. Can a star stop? How can a star stop?
From the Passion of the Christ producer Stephen McAveety, the Star of Bethlehem.
Because if we found the star and a reasonable person could conclude that we have, well, then the star was part of the natural order.
BethlehemStar.net to see with your own eyes as the Magi did.
As families gather this month to celebrate Christmas and the new year, many of us are taking stock of how everyone is doing. Time flies and we begin to realize that mom and dad are facing issues of old age. And come to think of it, you're not exactly getting any younger yourself. As we resolve to serve our families better in the new year, perhaps it's time to sit down and talk about the issues surrounding medical care and estate planning. As we face an uncertain future in this rapidly changing society, we should make sure our health care priorities are in line with Catholic Church teaching. A wonderful resource is Jerry Bartholomew, a pro-life Catholic attorney and graduate of Ave Maria School of Law. Jerry has a passion for protecting families as they get older. The number to reach Jerry is 800-475-1729. Again, that number, 1-800-475-1729. The website, MyPriorityPlan.com. Again, MyPriorityPlan.com.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya, and this week on Light of the East on Ave Maria,
Christ is born, glorify Him.
We acknowledge two great leaders from among our Orthodox brethren, the late Archbishop Jove
and His All-Holiness Patriarch Bartholomew.
Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 7 on 990 WDEO.
Very interested in having Dr. Patrick Fagan on with me this morning. He's an expert in this area. He's also a senior fellow with the Family Research Council. If you'd like more on this study that we're going to talk about this morning, you can get it through the Family Research Council website and take a look at it. and I really encourage you to do so. And the website, by the way, for the Family Research Council is frc.org, frc.org. Dr. Fagan, good morning.
Good morning, Teresa. Good to be with you.
All right, tell us about this latest report, and I've got it in front of me, the press release actually from the FRC, The Effects of Pornography on Individuals, Marriage, Family, and Community. What exactly did you look at in this research that you've produced so far in this particular report?
Well, we tried to pull together all the big pieces of research that have been done and to sort of meld them into a user-friendly or a layman-friendly report on what the latest research says. And we do know there's more research in the works, but most research tends to confirm and maybe explain a bit more, go into the details more about how things come about. But I suspect that what's already there is just going to be amplified more and more and more in the future.
Let me read a little bit of what this says. Pornography is a visual representation of sexuality which distorts an individual's concept of the nature of conjugal relations. This, in turn, alters both sexual attitudes and behavior. It is a major threat to marriage, to family, to children, and to individual happiness. In undermining marriage, it is one of the factors in undermining social stability. Social scientists, clinical psychologists, and biologists have begun to clarify some of the social and psychological effects. And neurologists are beginning to delineate the biological mechanisms through which pornography produces its powerful negative effects. I find it very interesting, and I think this is, I think, very telling. It goes back to the natural law or the moral order of things that I think there's a lot of discussion. You've probably heard a lot about this, you know, with all the different news stories and the tabloids. The whole situation, a very sad situation with Tiger Woods and his wife and what's happened with him. A lot of the experts now are coming out and talking about there must be some sort of a sexual addiction. And despite the efforts by the secular media and the culture to mainstream pornography so much, people are reacting, and they're very, very upset about Tiger Woods, about him not being a role model for people anymore, about, you know, how he treated his wife. I think that is telling that even though there are so many efforts to mainstream this type of activity and to make it seem that it's normal, I mean, because what's the big deal? This is what the media portrays. Everybody can do whatever they want with whom, whether they're married or not. And yet so many people are reacting so strongly to this just one story.
Yeah, well, I think there's a bit of a double bind and a bit of hypocrisy. People don't want it, and yet they turn on the TV. People don't want it, and yet they go to the movies. There's not outrage. We want our cake and eat it.
Mm.
And it's very understandable. I think any man, at least, knows, I don't know how, like men don't know how women's sexuality is. Oh, yeah, you can have a conceptual aspect of it. But men know how other men's sexuality is. And, you know, the soft porn is very, I would say, attractive, but just by its very nature, because women are attractive. And a guy has to fight it. And really be on guard almost all the time. And then he has to adapt. If a guy wants to stay pure, stay chaste, think only of his wife, but other women in the background, he has to live differently today. There's TV you just don't watch. There are movies you just don't go to. There are books you just don't buy. And that has been very different. So most people, I think, want their cake and eat it in this area. Yeah, this little bit is okay. You see, the desensitization, one of the big things that comes through in the pornography research is what's called desensitization. People become accustomed to what in the beginning was shameful or erotic, but after a while is no longer shameful nor erotic nor arousing. So they want something a little bit more. And then after a while, a year or two or three, that becomes blasé, and then they become accustomed to something a little bit more. You can see that in the history of the pornography magazines. The Playboy, which was the big iconic sort of launcher of pornography in America, in the beginning was, by today's standards, rather tame. But gradually, over the years, it became less so, and as other competitors came on the market to fulfill the desires of men, the degradation just notched down a bit, and that's a constant aspect of addictions. So what we have at this stage, I think, is a whole culture that's somewhat addicted, not just individuals.
talk, Doctor, a little bit in the research that you went through, the impact it has first on marriages, the impact pornography first has on marriages, and then you talk about it affecting family stability and then social stability. How does that happen?
Well, I put marriage first because that's where the damage is deepest. When men who are husbands, come into marriage addicted or become addicted in marriage, it has a huge effect on their marriage, on their relationship, on their whole view of their wife. It changes. She becomes less attractive. She knows she becomes less attractive. And if she finds out that he is addicted to pornography, it's a huge kick in the stomach. It undermines her standing with him, her standing with herself. What to me was a bit of an astounding finding is that many wives are so hurt and so damaged by this that they need treatment not just for depression, but for trauma.
Hmm.
And that's not too well known out there in the clinical world.
Why the trauma, do you think?
Because of the damage is so deep. It's like getting whacked by a bus, psychologically. Her whole view of herself as a woman in her most intimate aspects of being a woman, a mother, a wife, a spouse, is all tied into the sexual. That's why we are men and women, because we're differentiated that way. So when the man who's pledged himself to her is off living in another world, another sexual world that has no relationship whatever to her, except to push her further and further away, life unravels in her interiority.
So I'm thinking of the fallout from this. Okay, let's say this is not addressed, or it's addressed in a way, God forbid, that a couple, they can't, reconcile, they get divorced, so then you see the effect on marriage. But if these people are not getting treated, for example, if you're talking about trauma and you're talking about the psychological effect and impact of this kind of thing, then I could see a number of ways this would have a negative fallout on society.
Well, one piece of research is very little, almost none done in this area, but the one piece that has been done on what level of pornography is involved in divorces, and it seems to be very, very high, up as high as 2/3.
Wow.
Where it's a major factor, if not the major factor.
2/3?
2/3. Now, there's only one piece of research. It was done at the American Bar Association, the divorce lawyers division, and somebody put out a questionnaire to those divorce lawyers who were there, whose practices heavily involved with divorce. And then over the last years, they recalled the cases they had dealt with. They enumerated the number of cases where pornography was the main cause or a leading cause. And that was the research done. Now, it's far from perfect, but it's the only thing out there in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Mm. So that's what we have to go with at present.
Now,
it's very, very high.
Where do you hope this research, will end up in terms of getting out there to the general public to understand, what's happening here? Or what do you do when you have something like this and you have this body of information that is quite valuable in terms of understanding this huge issue of pornography? What will you do with this, or what have you done with this, for example, the latest report?
Well, what we're trying to do is to get many organizations to reprint it. We give them full permission. They can use their own logo, letterhead, just get it out there. Into the hands of pastors, into the hands of teachers, into the hands of nurses, doctors, therapists, and into the hands of men themselves who may be dealing with this, because they have to come to grips with it, or it can take over their lives, destroy their marriages, and even wreck their jobs. Now, the addiction process here is a bit similar to drugs. Not everybody who starts a marijuana is going to end up a cocaine addict.
Uh-huh.
But when you start off a marijuana, you never know if you're going to be the one who's going to be a cocaine addict. And there's a progression. And one of the different things here is that society at large is somewhat supportive of this. The enforcement of laws on obscenity has stopped. Look at the big three TV networks they're gradually pushing the edge on this.
Mm-hmm.
Cable TV is just saturated with it. You can turn all sorts of places. There's a huge market there, the internet, et cetera, and on it goes. We know that any of us who live in modern society are bumping up against this on the outer edge. But if you go looking for it very quickly, you can find a huge amount. So men who are addicted, there are a lot less women. It's about 1 to 6, 1 to 5 for every man who's addicted, a lot less women. But women who get addicted, it has an even worse effect on their life. But men are the main ones at risk. Teenage boys are where it starts frequently. It peaks, it seems, between age 35, 45. There are men who have money who can, on the online, the development of the internet has made the addiction much more possible. And with the quick succession of different types of pornography, men could get into this quicker and quicker.
And what's scary, too, I was mentioning this to you during the break before we came back on the air, this study that came out from the Pew Research Center regarding teens and sexting, that it's very it's very prominent, especially among 17-year-olds. 16 and 17-year-olds are getting more involved in sending sexually explicit or suggestive photos of themselves over the internet.
Yeah, and I think actually where all of this is leading, at least for Christians, is that we have to revisit the centrality of chastity, because it's highly related to a good marriage, actually. It's highly related to good sexuality, to the enjoyment in marriage of the marital bed to its fullest. The less the chastity is observed, the less the marriage bed is enjoyed.
Mm.
It's one of these very basic connections that in order to enjoy sexuality to the full the way it was meant to, you have to go God's way.
When are we going to get a clue? It's like, it's like, hello, you know, and we keep seeing all these different things. It just is not brain surgery. Study after study, report after report, whether it has to do with pornography or sexually transmitted diseases. It's just, you know, God says, look, I have a plan, and it's going to make you the happiest and the most fulfilled, you know? Boy, we have to have you back on. This is fascinating. Thank you for this work. Now, you mentioned also during the break that you're going to be producing a number of different papers. I know that your area of specialty is in terms of research
family
on marriage
religion.
And religion. Right. So what's coming up in 2010?
Well, we'll have an update of the effect of divorce on children. We did that before, but there's been a lot of research. And again, that'll just amplify it. There'll be nothing really new or groundbreaking. We will have... we've got a lot of studies going on which essentially illustrate that on every single outcome that's measurable in the federal surveys, people who are married and go to church weekly and their kids do best by far compared to everyone else in the nation. And again, there's a common sense behind that,
right.
But the media outside has totally forgotten it.
Yeah.
Those who do society best are those who are married and worship God weekly.
Well, go figure, right? Doctor, thank you so much, and fascinating, and I can't wait to have you back on the program, especially in the new year, to talk about these various papers that are coming out in the research. Really, everything points back to God. There is a moral order to things. You know, the natural law is written on our heart. The problem is we just suppress it and deny it and become desensitized to it, and that's where all the problems begin, you know?
And for society, too.
Yeah. The father knows best, and we just don't want to listen. We're just like those little kids who, you know, jump up and down on the floor in the supermarket. We don't get the candy bar that we want, you know, even though the candy bar is bad for us. Doctor, you have a Merry Christmas. Thank you for all this amazing work that you're doing. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Teresa. Bye-bye.
God bless you. Dr. Patrick Fagan, Senior Fellow and Director of the Center for Research on Marriage and Religion with the Family Research Council. And again, as he said, these studies, these reports, they make them available to people and print them up, pass them out, bring them to your church or your Bible study group. Pass the word around on this information. It's crucial. And we as Christians have got to take up this call. I mean, it's very, very serious. You know, this is my ministry. This is what I do. I talk about media influence and media activism. I was very affected by the media as a child when I became anorexic because of a TV show and then sucked into the culture as a reporter. Those of you who listen know my story. But I can't say enough about the importance of understanding the influences that are coming at us from the culture. Very, very important. And we have great resources like the FRC and Dr. Fagan to help us make a difference. So FRC.org, more information on this latest report on the effects of pornography on family, on children, on society. Check it out, FRC.org, and I believe it's still up there. I'm on the webpage right now. I think if you go under there, the issues and also the publications, you'll find it there. If not, I've also got it listed on my homepage at teresatomeo.com. And speaking of cultural influences, somebody who knows all about that and the impact that the media especially and the culture in terms of the culture of death have had on his own situation with his own family, so much so that he formed a very amazing foundation to speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. Bobby Schindler is going to be back with us, a friend of mine and an amazing witness for the faith and for life. And his website for the organization is terriesfight.org, T-E-R-R-I-S, terriesfight.org. He's a brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo. We'll be right back.
Investing can be stressful, especially during tough economic periods. Ave Maria Mutual Funds offers you the peace of mind associated with professional investment management. Experienced portfolio managers make investment decisions based on sound investment fundamentals and pro-life values. If you're a serious long-term investor, now may be a great time to examine your portfolio and see if the Ave Maria Mutual Funds could help you achieve your goals. To learn more, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA for a free investor kit or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
Father Ranieri Cantala Mesa, the preacher to the papal household, was one of the speakers at the recent Amazing Grace conference.
You didn't come to Detroit to this conference just to celebrate what did 40 years ago. This is certainly a very important goal, but I am sure I myself and you came to this conference hoping that we should experience what the Lord has did that time. We should experience a new Pentecost, not just celebrate that Pentecost. Am I right?
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. Bishop Sam Jacobs and Father Cantala Mesa were the Saturday evening speakers of the Amazing Grace Conference. We'll have both their talks on our next program. Join us for Putting on the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Bobby Schindler on the phone with me. Saw Bobby in October in Pennsylvania at the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Conference. It was their statewide conference held in Scranton, northeastern Pennsylvania. It was great to see him, and he gave a fabulous talk and kind of a combination of activism and his testimony, and it was pretty powerful stuff. Bobby, good morning. Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks, Teresa. Merry Christmas to you.
And how are things with Terry's Fight and the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation? What's the latest?
Well, we're certainly continuing to stay busy. In fact, I was just up in the Elmira, New York area, visiting my my uncle and my mom, who was visiting her brother at the time, and we're involved in a case up in that area, Sarah Harvey, and I was able to be there, and we had a press conference, and quite a few members of the press showed up to ask about our support behind this woman who's trying to bring her husband home. And care for him. Very similar in many ways to the situation that we're involved with Terry.
Mm. So how often are you seeing this? And you probably just see the cases, I mean, of the people that contact you. This must be going on quite a bit behind the scenes, things that we don't even know about.
Well, it is. We're getting contacted, it seems like daily, Teresa, with phone calls from people that need our help. Different situations, but all kind of the same common denominator where a loved one is in jeopardy of having their lives hastened. And we're also, you know what we're seeing a lot of, Teresa? We're seeing a lot of after the fact. And what I mean by that is families will call us after their loved one has been killed, and they feel as though there was something inappropriate that occurred that led to the death of their loved one prematurely. And we're seeing a lot of calls. It seems like a growing number of calls with those types of situations.
So at that point, though, it must be frustrating for you because there's little you can do except maybe, you know, give them advice so that it doesn't happen again.
Right, and we sometimes will, depending on where the call is coming from, there might be an attorney that we might be able to recommend they call and look into seeing if there was something that was done inappropriately to a loved one. But at that point, there's really not a whole lot we can do. And these families, there's so many families that are suffering right now. I know there's a lot going on with the economy and so many other things in our lives. But there's so many families right now that are just suffering from these types of situations, and it's just quite sad.
Let me put out the phone number if anyone has a question for Bobby, 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. Let's take a look at the last year in terms of where you think we've come, where we're going in terms of the culture of death and the culture of life, and looking ahead to 2010. What are you seeing, Bobby? What do you think?
Well, I hate to sound so negative, Teresa, but there just seems to be a growing mentality, particularly in the medical community, towards this whole quality of life acceptance. And I think we're being indoctrinated and are being sold the bill of goods to accept this way of thinking, where depending on someone's quality, there are situations where it's okay to end their lives. And we're talking many cases where it's simply food and water, and similar to Terry's. And I see the so-called, if you want to use, culture of death, just advancing, and so many more people kind of accepting this mentality, and that's what's so scary. And I see it in the media and how they report on situations like Terry. I just saw it up in New York with the media up there and how they refer to this man that has this cognitive disability, and it chips away, I believe, at this whole value and dignity of human beings, and that's what's so frightening, Teresa. It's just, although there's a lot of, as you know, and we both know, we deal in circles where people value the dignity of life, but I think overall our nation is accepting this whole quality of life attitude, and it's quite frightening.
Well, it was even kind of, the last time you were on with me, I know that you had sent me that email from that woman that infiltrated the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Conference, and she identified herself as a writer, and yet she was a secularist, and she was a radical feminist, and then she wrote about it on her blog, and her perception, it's like, did she go to the same conference? It was absolutely frightening what she wrote and what ended up on the Internet, and you're thinking that this mindset, and she represents, unfortunately, a lot of people, I think, who are out there.
There's this prejudice that exists. I mean, you look at someone like my sister, and there's this prevailing prejudice that exists, and I see it with the way she's made fun of all the time, and it just amazes me when someone's outward appearance will change, and somehow they lose their inherent worth because they can't do what we can do, at least from a physical standpoint. And it's quite crazy if you think about it. I mean, just because someone like my sister can't do certain things, but there's still people there that want to care for them.
Right.
Well, that's not good enough anymore. We're choosing to kill, and it's just, again, I think it's just it's what we're seeing in our society today with so much killing that occurs on a daily basis, whether it's abortion or just simple. The killing when you're talking about on the streets, but it trickles down, and now we're doing it to our most vulnerable when we're speaking about the elderly and the cognitively disabled.
How about that man who was in that coma who came out of that situation? How many years? And he said he could hear everything and he knew everything that was going on, but he couldn't speak. He was trapped inside his body.
23, Ron Human.
Yeah,
and it was just an amazing story. And Terry's name, again, came up with that case because, again, it brought into question on my sister's condition and the fact that quite possibly the same could have been true for her. We just don't know. And she was not afforded the test that determined
right.
that Mr. Hubin was, mm-hmm. was aware. Terry was denied these tests by the judge and Michael Chavo in this situation. And I tell you, Teresa, the thought of my sister having awareness, which we believe she did,
mm-hmm.
But the thought that she was completely aware while being dehydrated to death, it's just too much to even think about.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We've got some calls. If you have a question for Bobby Schindler, give us a call at 877-573-7825. Also, being that this is Christmas week, and then, of course, we are keeping our eyes on the prize, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, Bobby has an incredible testimony that goes along with all this amazing work that he's doing, and he shared a little bit of it in Pennsylvania, talking about that he believes that his sister was really working in some ways, in many ways actually, during her ordeal and sacrificing herself in hopes of bringing family to Christ. And he talks about this, and he said this at the conference, and I'll tell you what, there wasn't a dry eye in the house, except maybe for that woman that I still pray for who wrote that horrible thing on the Internet. But I pray for her, and it was interesting, Bobby, when you sent me that link, that's the first thing I did was I started to pray for her because I could see she was so angry and so hurt. Somebody hurt her. And I bet, after reading that she's probably post-abortive. You know, I mean, that's right. The sense that I got from that blog. But, you know, so I just immediately started to pray for her. Anyway, we'll be right back with Bobby Schindler from the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation. Terry'sFight.org is the website. Bobby is going to be joining me, God willing, in January, where I cover the conference, or actually I should say the March for Life for EWTN. We'll be doing live TV interviews all day long. We'll be out there. Damon Owens and myself will be the roving reporters in Washington. Looking forward to that. The mission of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation is to develop a national network of resources and support for the medically dependent persons with disabilities and the incapacitated who are in or are potentially facing life-threatening situations. You can find out more, again, about this organization, terrysfight.org. Listening to EWTN Global Catholic Radio.
What makes the miracles of Jesus even more miraculous? Standing where they happened, in Israel. Come to the hills of Galilee where Jesus fed the multitude. Follow the way of the cross along the Via Dolorosa. Stroll through Capernaum where Jesus lived and taught and healed. To learn more about standing where it all happened in Israel, the Holy Land, visit GoIsrael.com. Come visit Israel. You'll never be the same.
Faith, family, and the culture of life. It's Family Man with Catholic therapist Dr. Gregory Popchak.
We live in a stressful world. Sometimes it seems as if life is squeezing us so hard we might burst. This is especially true for married couples, for whom balancing work and family is a constant struggle. Wouldn't it be nice if there was a simple way to take our emotional temperature down a few pegs? Researchers have discovered that couples have an underappreciated resource for combating stress: holding hands. Researchers at the University of Virginia viewed brain scans of spouses responding to stressful situations. When wives held their husbands' hands, their brain waves showed more resistance to stress than when they had to encounter the stressful event alone. As you might expect, the greater the couple's satisfaction with the marriage overall, the greater the protection from stress hand-holding provided. But even couples in less satisfying marriages experienced less stress while clinging to each other. Galatians 6:2 tells us, "Bear one another's burdens." It seems holding hands is one simple way couples can make each other's lives a little easier. In good times and bad, richer or poorer, in sickness and health, just remember, hold on tight. I'm Dr. Gregory Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
You've been listening to Family Man with Catholic therapist Dr. Gregory Popchak. To discover more resources for living an abundant life, including books, CDs, and Catholic counseling services, visit us online at exceptionalmarriages.com.
Is from the CD Sacred Classics, Adrienne Price. You can get that through the EWTN website, also AveMariaRadio.net, and that's a beautiful CD and very appropriate, talking about the dignity of the human person, of course, and that's why this whole thing of the culture of death is such an attack on God, because, of course, of the incarnation, the dignity of each and every single human being that is created in the image and likeness of God. Anonymous woman from Florida has a question about nursing homes. Bobby, so let's go to that question first. She's calling in on line one. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Bobby, do you get any kind of calls from the public regarding abuse charges against an individual, a family, particularly a family that is not local, and there is only one person visiting the patient? generally, I'm seeing that the patient is on Medicaid, and the patient is a lot of work or difficult psychologically. And it seems that the nursing home feels that they're, well, I'm just projecting. The nursing home feels that there is not enough money coming in, and so they charge the individual who's visiting with abuse. The police are called in, and the individual visiting their loved one is separated from their family member in the nursing home. And what happens then is that there are things being done in the nursing home to get that individual ill.
Okay. And, all right. So you're talking. I just want to summarize this, honey, because we have another question, and I want to give Bobby time. So basically, Bobby, she was asking regarding nursing homes if there are incidents of people being abused and separated from loved ones.
Well, quite frankly, yes. In fact, we're dealing with this case up in New York that's kind of similar to what you're suggesting here. But I also want to say, Teresa, that there are just a tremendous amount of good nursing homes out there that do what they're supposed to do in the way they treat loved ones. But at the same time, we are seeing, seems to me, an increase of these types of situations where, well, I'll say it, bottom line is money. If it costs too much and they're losing money on an individual, it seems to me that the steps are being taken to somehow hasten a person's life. But as I said, there's a lot of good nursing homes out there, good hospices out there. Just have to find out which ones they are.
Yeah, okay. Appreciate the phone call. Christine from Indianapolis this morning on line two. Hi, Christine. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Teresa. And my son is handicapped. We did try to meet you, but we got stuck in traffic, so we had to go to a later Mass. But my goal is, so we couldn't meet you on the Feast Day of Our Lady, but my goal is to meet with you in the new year.
Oh,
so
God willing.
My prayers and thoughts are always with you. Hello, Bobby. I would like to ask you, have there been any miracles attributed to the intercession of your dear sister? Could she at some point be called blessed?
Well, I don't know if there's been any miracles. We have gotten emails, and I have conversations with individuals. For example, there was two conversations I've had where, because of Terry's situations, two young men entered the priesthood, citing Terry's case as the reasons why. We had an email, which I'm trying to find, Teresa. We had an email from a woman that was in an abortion clinic and was going to have an abortion, and either started reading an article about my sister's case or something about Terry, and it changed her mind, and she got up and left the abortion clinic and had the baby. And I have to find that email because we save all these emails. But there have been a tremendous amount of emails that we've gotten here at the foundation where Terry just where people are praying to Terry, and Terry has changed them in some subtle ways and others in significant ways. And, you know, it's funny, Teresa, you brought up my situation and others that we get these emails from these people. And this whole time we're all trying to save my sister's life and really look at the lives that, she's the one who ended up saving people's lives.
Well, also you said that you consider yourself a miracle product of your sister's because of your own walk with the Lord, right?
Well, I was so angry, and I didn't want anything to do with my faith. I was blaming everything on I guess God and what was happening to my family, and in particular to my sister. And really, if I had more time, I could explain what happened. But yeah, it was because of Terry and her situation that really brought me back and brought me back to having a very strong relationship with Christ.
Now, you were talking about, we have about 4 minutes left, so I don't want to go into too much detail, but you said that Jim Caviezel was also significant because he called you out of the blue when all of this was going on with your sister and said that he was praying for you every single day.
Yes, it was during when my sister's feeding tube was removed, and I received a phone call from him and was praying, took time to call me every day and pray for me for several minutes on the phone, and I can't tell people enough what that meant to me at the time. He's very deep in his faith, and he provided so much help for me at a time where the help was very much needed. And it was quite something because it was his movie. It was The Passion of the Christ, not his movie, but the movie he was in that really brought me back to brought me back to my faith.
Now, I'm trying to think. That was in, the movie came out in 2004, right?
Right before Easter,
yeah.
04.
Mm-hmm. 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 So where were you at that point? You were still very angry and struggling.
Oh, yeah, I was drifting further and further from our Lord, and it was that movie. I believe I saw it on Ash Wednesday, if I remember correctly, and then it was Good Friday where it was I went back to church for the first time in several years on Good Friday, and I just remember sitting in the church crying and asking for forgiveness.
What was it about the movie? I mean, there are so many aspects in that movie that I think people draw things, you know, different things from it depending on their own circumstance.
Well, I think it was quite simple. I was placing all my blame on people that were leaders of the church when, in reality, the only person that I needed to rely on, or the only person I needed to look towards, was Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, he's perfect, and through him we're all saved. And I was just looking. I was looking at the wrong people to help me, Teresa, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. And then you and I were talking during the break about the incredible leaders that we do have in the church, including, of course, somebody we both love, Archbishop Burke, who's been amazing to you and very supportive of me. And, you know, you wonder the struggles that they go through. Well, we know, you know, what they're up against. But, you know, men are going to disappoint because men are human. We're going to make mistakes.
Right. And it's right. And that's what I was doing. I was looking at all the people in the clergy that were really against what our family was doing and advocating for Terry's death, and I couldn't understand it, and I was blaming them. When in reality, it was ridiculous, really, the way I was acting.
Well, but you can understand your frustration. I mean, you know, and you want to turn to the church. Of course, you did have and still do have the amazing ministry of Father Frank Pavone, who was there with you, you know, all the way through. But I can't even imagine, because you got to. And when you get attacked from within the church, it's harder to take. I mean, we see over history and over time, especially with the great saints like St. John of the Cross and St. Teresa of Avila, what they went through, St. Catherine of Siena. But at the same time, you don't really expect it from the church. You hope it's going to be different. And then when it happens from within, it's even more painful. But, you know, it's a friend of mine always says, Father John Ricardo says, look at the book of Acts. If we think that this didn't happen before, you know.
Well, it was prayer, too, Teresa.
Yeah.
Everybody praying for me and our family at the time, I think that had a lot to do with it as well.
Bobby, always good to speak with you. Look forward to seeing you, God willing, at the March for Life in Washington. You have a Merry Christmas. Tell your sister I said hello. We'll see you then.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Merry Christmas. Hi, I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, editor-in-chief of the Chaldean News. We are in the Christmas spirit this month. Our cover photo is of the new grotto at St. Thomas Chaldean Catholic Church. You can read all about how it came to be, a project 2 years in the making. It's now done and already being visited by hundreds of people. It's a place of spiritual solitude. Niran Carmo talks about keeping the focus on Christ's Christmas season in the ECRC column. Also this month, we feature a visit the Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce members had with the newly elected Detroit City Council members, including a one-on-one discussion with Council President-elect Charles Pugh. Get your copy of the Chaldean News and learn about this ancient community living in modern times. You can subscribe or advertise today. Join Golden Sun Jewelry, Avante Furniture, and Heartland Market. Again, Merry Christmas from the Chaldean News.
Doesn't it make sense to let Catholics in your community know that your business operates with strong family and moral values? The Catholic Business Pages builds a bridge between your business and faithful consumers, serving the Catholic community with honesty, fairness, and trust. Take a stand and take a step of faith. List your business in a directory that stands for moral values. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Catholic Business Pages link.